is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
we are having our democratic country back. And everybody can speak to everybody about everything.
That's William Ruto, who has been declared the president-elect of Kenya, speaking today in Nairobi. Details coming up. Also, militiamen have killed 16 people at a gold mining site in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, William Ruto, the declared president-elect of Kenya, says if there are court challenges to last week's election, his team will engage. Ruto spoke today as the country awaits a likely court petition from losing candidate Raila Odinga.
I want to tell the people of Kenya, we are having our democratic country back. And everybody can speak to everybody about everything in every way they want, and nobody is going to victimize them.
He went to say he envisions a professional government that works for all Kenyans.
Public service will be professional, and I expect that the public service will serve Kenyans equally without any preference to tribe, communities, or any preference to political affiliations.
In the past few decades, Kenyan elections have frequently led to court challenges. At times, there have been violence around elections, particularly in 2007, when more than 1,300 people died. While this election has been peaceful, Odinga, a longtime opposition leader in his fifth attempt at the presidency, has said his campaign will pursue all constitutional and legal options to challenge the declared results. Ruto today said he and his Kenya Kwanza alliance will proceed to prepare for a transition of power despite the possible challenge.
We will be suggesting members of Kenya Kwanza to the transition committee. I think we are doing that today so that the process of the transition can kick in and we can go towards concluding the matter of the election.
For more on the latest developments on this closely fought race in Kenya, I spoke with Abdushakur Abdu from VOA Swahili Service, who is in Nairobi monitoring the situation.
Thank you very much. What is happening in Nairobi, there is a limbo, legal limbo. People are waiting to see what Raila Odinga is going to do, what case he's going to bring about. And you have also the other part, Azimio, his alliance, which also wants to bring a suit because saying that the Electoral Commission was not unanimous when the results was being announced because four of the members of the committee decided to refuse the outcome of the election. So the chairman of the IEBC has said that he went on and gave out the results. So according to the law, he is the final person to give out the results. So the question and debate is he legally bound to just give the results, or he needs the agreement of the whole? He's now going speed ahead to be president-elect. He's preparing his team. They're preparing for his inauguration. He's receiving security clear information from all intelligences. So he is going ahead with his plan according to how the law says in Kenya.
Abdushakur, so what does the law say in Kenya? Does everything have to stop until maybe the Supreme Court makes a decision, or Ruto can just go ahead and act as a president-elect?
In reality, Ruto can go on as president-elect, and Raila has 7 days to file a lawsuit, and the Supreme Court has 14 days to come up with a result. So they have planned it in a way that by the time the Supreme Court finishes its decision, it's the time for swearing in. So what happens is that Ruto goes ahead with his plans without any obstruction, without any legal obstruction. So he can go ahead. And it's only when the Supreme Court comes out with a decision, probably then the thing stops and you call in for a new election or whatever the Supreme Court decide. But I'm talking with a lot of lawyers and talking with a lot of observers here. They are saying that they don't think there will be a same rerun like last time when they refused Kenyatta's winning. And so they're hoping that there won't be any question of bringing back Kenya to do elections for presidential elections.
In all this, Abdul Shakur, what is the mood of the country? How are people seeing this whole affair?
The country, most of the people we have been talking to believe they're tired. They're tired because the campaign was so long. They think that it is time to go ahead. They want Raila to stop and let Ruto continue. And especially they're saying that Ruto in his speech said that he's willing to work with everybody. He's willing to work with opponents. So people are saying we don't have time. What we really need is the economy to go back, because after the COVID and after the election, people want to see that life goes back. Life is too expensive in Kenya. Things are becoming too hard for people. They only want their lives back and they want the economy to rebound. And they want Ruto to start working to bring back a good economical situation.
That was Abdul Shakur Abud from VOA Swahili Service. He was speaking to me from Nairobi. As we have pointed out earlier, in Kenya, William Ruto's been declared the narrow winner of last week's election, a result his rival Raila Odinga says he will dispute in court. In South Africa, home to a large contingent of Kenyan business people, supporters of both candidates are celebrating an election that was largely peaceful. Their country remains haunted by the aftermath of Kenya's 2007 poll, when human rights groups say about 1,300 people were killed in political and ethnic violence. Darren Taylor reports.
The Good Governance Africa group says 55-year-old Ruto did well because he convinced voters he's not part of the old guard of Kenyan politics, even though he began his career lobbying for former President Daniel Arap Moi 30 years ago.
Mr. Ruto is quite a charismatic figure in his own right, presenting himself almost as this upstart by his own bootstraps personality against Mr. Odinga, who has now entered into what some might see as an alliance with former President Kenyatta.
Vincent Obisia Orlu focuses on East Africa for Good Governance Africa, a Johannesburg-based research institution. He says Kenyans no longer want to be governed by what he calls traditional political bloodlines. These are perhaps best represented by Odinga, a 77-year-old veteran politician and former political prisoner, and outgoing president Uhuru Kenyatta, son of Kenya's founding father and first post-colonial leader Jomo Kenyatta. Odlu says Ruto's description of himself as a hustler who sold chickens alongside a highway as a youngster found resonance, but not necessarily among the youth.
While very revolutionary statements of hustler mode and this generational change idea have been made by Mr. Ruto, there's a lot of apathy from the youth. We've been here before, some might say. Do the youth actually think that generational change is in fact possible? Or generational change can occur and take some of that power away from the old guard and these dynastic families and bring it into their hands for their own benefits?
If the results announced on Monday survive Odinga's court challenge, Orlu says Ruto then will need to prove he's dedicated to allowing talented youth to take their country forward. But for Kenyan businessman in Johannesburg, James Kamau, this election already represents a leap in the right direction for the East African powerhouse.
I mean, the results at the polling stations were there in the website. Everybody can tarry. You can all do your tarrying and come up with your conclusion. But at the end of the day, if you tarry all the votes, you come to the same conclusion. I mean, it was very transparent. And to us, that is what is important. It is not whether it's Ruto or is Raila or is who. What was important is that we have demonstrated to ourselves and to the world that we can be able to make a choice and make a choice in a dignified manner.
Orlu says campaigning's the easy part of winning an election. Good governance is the real test. And he says Ruto, if he is indeed sworn in as Kenya's fifth president, will face big challenges, including a debt burden of more than $73 billion.
He's also going to need the will and the gusto to reevaluate and go into some of these debt agreements with foreign lenders. And if he agrees and goes through what he said about, he will review and repeal some of the agreements that have been made that are not beneficial. He's going to need to really do a lot on the economy side to bolster employment and make young Kenyans see the potential for them to have opportunity in this generational change Kenya that he's spoken about.
For now, and despite Odinga's looming court challenge, Kenyans like Kamau are happy that this was largely an issues-based election rather than one fought on ethnic grounds. Signs, they say, of a stronger democracy and of Kenya being a beacon of hope in a region that's seeing a resurgence of autocratic tendencies from leaders. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The French news agency AFP says militiamen have killed 16 people at a gold mining site in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. Local authorities say the attack took place early Tuesday in Sumba village in Ituri province. Authorities say the attack was carried out by a political religious sect called CODECO, the Cooperative for the Development of the Congo. AFP says 4 people were killed and 2 Chinese workers were kidnapped in the same area last week after soldiers battled CODECO at a Chinese-managed mine in Mungambwala village. CODECO is one of more than 120 militias operating in the eastern DRC. Somalia's government this week announced plans to crack down on so-called shadow courts run by the Islamist militant group Al-Shabaab. The country's interior minister acknowledged that many Somalis go to the militants for justice because Somalia's legal system is too weak. But experts on Somalia say closing the shadow courts will be no easy task, as Mohamed Daisen reports from the capital, Mogadishu.
Somalia's new interior minister, Ahmed Mualim Fiqi, said this week the government plans to wage war against so-called shadow courts that Al-Shabaab runs in and around the capital, Mogadishu. He said the government will close the Al-Shabaab courts within the next 2 years. He says there are people who go to terrorist Al-Shabaab courts to seek justice due to a lack of enforcement of the government court's decisions. He says we will close the Al-Shabaab courts around Mogadishu, including the one located in Basra and on the outskirts of Dainila district of Mogadishu. Omar Mohamud is a senior East Africa analyst for a research organization, the International Crisis Group. He told VOA the group has invested in its justice sector and primarily focuses on land and contract disputes.
For those using them voluntarily, pull factors include a reputation for lower levels of corruption, less discrimination based on clan, and high enforcement capacity compared to the government system. And the courts themselves are not always that sophisticated, and the threat of brutal force underpins them. But at the end of the day, they have shown to be more effective in addressing the needs for some populations.
Matt Bryden is the Horn of Africa analyst based in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. He says the courts also operate in a way more accessible to many Somalis by invoking Islamic law. Cracking down on the courts will be a formidable challenge, he says.
First, the federal and state governments are going to have to earn the public trust in the state-run judicial system, because that is still in its infancy and widely perceived as inefficient and corrupt. So that has to improve. Secondly, they have to be able to protect citizens from Al-Shabaab violence, because the jihadist courts work essentially like a protection racket. Either you obey their summons and you abide by their rulings, or Al-Shabaab will hunt you down and mete out punishment, even in areas under government control.
Abdirazak Adan is Executive Director for Foresight Africa Research and Policy Studies. He said the government's willingness to close the Al-Shabaab courts is commendable. He says he believes the best way to fight Al-Shabaab courts is to get an active judicial system which works for the people and creates a friendly environment for the people who seek justice. He says it is unfortunate that everyone who thinks he lost a court case unfairly goes to Al-Shabaab courts. Since the Taliban takeover of Afghanistan last year, Al-Shabaab has reportedly built schools and hospitals in the parts of Somalia they control in a bid to gain more popular support. But the group, which has battled Somali governments for 15 years, has not stopped carrying out attacks. Last month, Al-Shabaab carried out suicide attacks in the towns of Merka and Jowhar, claiming the lives of more than 25 people, including senior officials. Mohamed Daisane, VOA News, Mogadishu.
Health officials in Zimbabwe are attempting to contain a measles outbreak that has infected more than 2,000 people and killed at least 157 children. The country's health ministry blames the outbreak on religious sects that are against vaccinations. The government wants all children vaccinated before schools reopen in early September. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe's Information Minister Monica Mchangwa said the infectious viral disease, which causes a fever and red rash, was rampant in Manicaland province, which borders Mozambique. She said 1,270 cases and 122 deaths had been recorded in the province as of Tuesday.
All the victims had not received vaccinations against measles. Government has invoked Civil Protection Unit Act to deal with this emergency, and the Minister of Health is on the ground carrying out an intensive vaccination program. Cabinet has directed the Minister of Health and Child Care to engage traditional leaders and faith leaders in the vaccination program.
The government is trying to vaccinate all children between the ages 6 and 15 with the help of UN agencies such as UNICEF and the World Health Organization, said July Moyo, Zimbabwe's Minister of Local Government. Moyo said the goal is to finish the vaccination as soon as possible.
Civil Protection Unit met to analyze what has to be done. What they are sure of is that this spread now needs to be tackled as an emergency. We have now mobilized resources to make sure that children are vaccinated before schools open. This July and August, we have a lot of churches that assemble, and we think that is the way these measures can be spread. So we are targeting those so that they can be vaccinated.
Dr. Klopa Simbetete, president of Zimbabwe College of Public Health Physicians, says the government must continue talking to religious leaders of sects that do not believe in vaccination to prevent more measles outbreaks.
This is the second one, and it's sad because measles is one of the vaccine-preventable diseases of childhood. Such an outbreak really shows that things are not functioning as they should be in terms of our public health system. In this case, you realize that the majority of children that are being affected belong to a certain religious sect. And sadly, this religious sect does not consent to vaccination of children.
A previous measles outbreak, mainly in Manicaland province in May, affected 137 people and caused about 20 deaths. Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
Despite a nationwide vaccination campaign that started in May, Malawi is struggling to contain a cholera outbreak that has infected more than 1,000 people and caused 44 deaths. Malawi's health officials say poor sanitation and cross-border contamination from neighboring Mozambique are to blame. Lameck Masina reports from Blantyre.
The latest cholera situation update from the Malawi Ministry of Health shows that as of Tuesday, the country recorded 1,073 cases as well as the 44 deaths. These are triple figures recorded when the vaccination campaign was launched 3 months ago. The report also says the outbreak has now spread to 10 districts from 8 in May. The hardest hit districts include Blantyre with 489 cases, Neno with 128 cases, and Nsanje with 289 cases. George Mbotwa is the spokesperson for a health office in Nsanje district, which borders Mozambique, south of Malawi. He says continued incidents of cholera in the district are largely because of movements of people between the two countries.
What is worrisome is that we have continued to record the cases when by now we would have contained the situation. It's because some of these cases we are sharing with Mozambique. So the cases would be coming from Mozambique and then reporting to health facilities in Nsanje, and then they're still being recorded as Nsanje cases.
Mbotwa says the situation is slowly improving after officials on the Mozambican side agreed during recent discussions to set up their own cholera treatment sites on their side of the border.
The Mozambican side by then didn't have cholera treatment sites, and now they have them there. So if people are also able to report the cases right there, unlike coming with the cases to Malawi.
Cholera is an acute diarrheal infection caused by ingesting food or water contaminated with bacteria. The disease affects both children and adults, and if untreated, it can kill within hours. Benjani Chunda is the environmental health officer in Blantyre. He says although Blantyre is largely an urban area, cholera cases are on the rise because most people fetch water from unprotected sources like rivers and streams.
In most parts of Blantyre, we don't have potable water source. It might be like an urban setup, but not potable water sources. And we've got dry taps in some of the areas. Are not working at all.
The spokesperson for the Minister of Health, Adrian Chikumbe, says health authorities are currently distributing chlorine for water treatment and providing public education on good hygiene. Chikumbe also hopes the second phase of the national oral cholera vaccination campaign, which is expected to start soon in the most hit districts, will help contain the situation. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
The UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, says millions of children will soon have access to the first vaccine against malaria. The United Nations says it has signed a contract to spend as much as $170 million with the pharmaceutical company GSK for the vaccine. UNICEF says that it will provide 18 million doses of the RTSS vaccine over the next 3 years. UNICEF officials say increasing volume should lead to sustainable, lower prices for the medication, making it easier for countries to introduce it as soon as possible. The new vaccine is the result of more than 35 years of research. A pilot program launched 3 years ago in Ghana, Kenya and Malawi has reached 800,000 children. In 2020, nearly 500,000 children in Africa died from the disease, a rate the UN says equals one death every minute. The UN is recommending the vaccine's widespread use in more than 30 countries with moderate to high transmission rates of malaria. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Nelson Lopes, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.